Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Idaho House kills teachers' budget after repeated barrage of complaints from representatives about critical race theory and social justice in K through 12 schools, right out of the Idaho Freedom Foundation playbook. University of Idaho President C. Scott Green speaks about the Idaho Freedom Foundation attacks on higher education, and Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeachan of Idaho Falls proposes an study on indoctrination in schools in a task force and gets pushback on Twitter. Whitman County moves back to phase two of Washington's reopening plan, and Moscow Committee recommends sidewalk cafe design for One World Cafe. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And from the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Far-right paranoia of social justice and so-called critical race theory in the form of talking points from the Idaho Freedom Foundation took over the Idaho House today as the House killed the $1.1 billion public schools budget for teachers on a tie 34-34 vote. Republican Representatives Terry Gestrin of Donnelly and Fred Wood of Burley were absent. Tie votes fail in the Idaho House. District 5 Republicans Carolyn Nielsen Troy of Genesee and Brandon Mitchell of Moscow voted in favor of the teacher's budget. Republican Representatives Ron Nate of Rexburg, Heather Scott of Blanchard, Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls, and Priscilla Giddings of Whitebird led the charge, repeating unfounded claims by the Idaho Freedom Foundation and saying House Bill 354 must go back to the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee to be redone to prevent any teaching of social justice or what they called critical race theory. The House killed the state higher ed budget last week on a 57-13 vote for the same reasons, with Representatives Nate, Scott, Horman, and Giddings repeating the same accusations about higher education and throwing in red baiting, that is, accusing Black Lives Matter and, by extension, social justice of being communist. Regarding the K through 12 teachers' budget today, House Education Committee Chair Lance Klo of Twin Falls said he had not heard of any complaints from parents anywhere about the teaching of social justice or critical race theory in schools. Representative Ron Nate of Rexburg seemed to be calling for censorship when he said on the House floor today, "We need to make sure that they are fulfilling the mission of education without going into areas that are against Idaho values and American values and social justice and critical race theory, as we have seen earlier this session, has reared its head in pre-K. It has reared its head in higher education, and now we know it's also becoming a problem in K through 12 education." The Idaho Press website reported Nate was referring to false claims by the Idaho Freedom Foundation that a federal early learning grant would require Idaho to partner with a national group promoting critical race theory. During the debate, Republican Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard called for intent language. Here's Scott, followed by Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls.
Our teachers are great, and we need to fund our teachers, but we need to protect our teachers from being forced to teach this garbage of social justice, including critical race theory.
Your objection. All right. The lady is choosing her words carefully, as usual.
Thank you.
And those chosen words have raised an objection. So please proceed with that in mind and make your points. As always, they're valid.
Thank you. Teachers are given curriculum. They are given direction, and they are given agendas. and they need to stick to what they're being told to do. I have no problem funding teachers. I just believe that this bill needs some intent language put in it to protect our teachers. I have teachers that are afraid to speak out, that call me, and they're afraid to speak out because they have house payments and they cannot leave their jobs. Intent language in here would just be one extra step we could do as legislators to help protect them from teaching stuff that is ideology and that is undermining our very foundations of this country. And it is happening. And schools are not like they used to be. Things are different. There's a lot of ideology coming into our schools. And I would just encourage you to return this back to JFAC and let them put some intent language in to protect our teachers. And I urge you to vote no on this bill.
I have asked for these budgets to be held until we could do it the proper way and get the policy passed that prohibits discrimination on the base of race or sex or any other aspect. That policy has not moved. And therefore, I believe this budget needs to be returned to JFAC to add policy that prohibits discrimination and prohibits teaching that the discrimination on the basis of race or sex is a good thing for our children to hear. Unity and diversity are not opposites. The way we get to university is by fostering an atmosphere of inclusion and respect for all viewpoints. And if we can't get the policy passed, then I'm willing to put it in a budget that prohibits discrimination. That's why I'll be voting no on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And that was Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls. And before that, you heard from Representative Heather Scott of Blanchard, both Republicans. Legislative Republicans in normal years tend to support the teacher's budget, usually rubber stamping JFAC's recommendations on the House or Senate floor. One Republican who seemed to be newly supportive of the Idaho Freedom Foundation's attacks was Julian Young.
I appreciate teachers. My degree is in education. And for me, this is not about teachers. This is about a process and about our responsibility as a legislature to address important issues, which, by the way, cut across partisan lines and affect everyone. Now, it's been said that there's no evidence that this is being taught in our K-12 schools, and I don't have any documents I can shop in front of you. But I can tell you that I have talked to parents in my district, in my districts, my legislative district, I won't say which school district, who tell me that their high school students are getting critical race theory from their government teacher in my district. So I do believe that it's an issue that needs to be addressed. It's not a fringe issue. It's a mainstream issue, and it should be a significant concern to every one of us, regardless of which party we're associated with or what we think our politics are.
That was Republican Representative Julianne Young of Blackfoot. Support for the teacher's budget was strong among some Republicans. Here's Megan Blanksma of Hammett, followed by House Education Committee Chair Lance Klo of Twin Falls.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the comments from the good gentleman from 23, and I can honestly say that he is one of the best teachers my children have had. And they appreciate him, does a great job, and it's always a pleasure to hear when they get back from his class. Even though they're seniors when they have him, they get excited and they like his projects. So with that, I would like to remind the body, this is about paying our teachers. If you want to discuss curriculum choices or things that need to be addressed and choices that are made by districts, this is not your budget. This is about paying our teachers, which are good people and deserve our support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
This budget is about teachers and paying teachers. Even if we were to put intent language to protect the teachers in this bill, I'm not sure if that's the appropriate place to do that. But one of the complaints I always hear is teachers that are wandering off and doing things that aren't approved by the school board. We hear a lot more of that. In fact, some of the legislation we've seen earlier this year and in past years has to do with things that are being taught in the classroom that the state or their school boards know nothing about. We also hear about the giving local decisions. I agree that we should be very careful of what we're teaching, what curriculums we choose, and I think a lot of the things that I hear about some of this social justice issues, some of this goes too far. Most of that has been leveled at the university level, not at the high school level. And I've not seen any evidence. I've not heard any complaints from any parents anywhere. And as chairman of education, I haven't heard these complaints. I hear rumors and we shouldn't do this, but no specifics. There's no specifics about this. And I think that what we need to be looking at here is this the appropriate amount that we should be budgeting to pay these teachers and for the work they're doing? If the teachers feel they need protections, they haven't come to us either to ask for special intent language. So I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
And that was House Education Committee Chair Lance Klo of Twin Falls, preceded by Megan Blanksma of Hammett, both Republicans. Democrats were in favor of passing the teachers' pay budget, with one calling the ideas from the Idaho Freedom Foundation nuts. Here's Democratic Representative Chris Matthews of Boise, who is the only black member of the Idaho legislature, followed by John McCrosty of Boise, also a Democrat.
Idaho Code 67-5909 already prohibits discrimination on all the things we're talking about, so I don't think we want to reinvent the wheel there. And secondly, I haven't seen an update to this study in a couple years ago, but a couple years ago the State Department of Education published a report about what's happening in our teacher pipeline. Where are the leaks? Where are the inputs? Where are the outputs? And I was shocked, and I suspect that the number hasn't changed materially, but I was shocked to hear that every year about 1,000 of our licensed educators leave the profession. Not to move to another school, but they move out of state. They decide they want to go be welders or legislators, but they decide to stop teaching. And the fact that we don't pay them, and the fact that we have conversations like this every time it's time to pay them, exacerbate the situation. We have a constitutional obligation to maintain public school system, so let's not get too far astray here. Let's fund our teachers. Let's fund the good gentleman from 23.
My head is just absolutely spinning right now in listening to a lot of this debate. And I think what I'd like to share is to kind of bring it back to part of what the gentleman from 23 had shared in his opening. And I'd like to invite you to Mr. McCrosty's classroom. And Mr. McCrosty's classroom at the beginning of the year was here. It was inside this computer. Ladies and gentlemen, as someone who has taught school for 18 years in the state of Idaho, the two hardest years for me were the very first year when I did not know what I was doing, and this year when I know absolutely what I'm doing, and I have to transform it all, and I need to put it into this little box. I don't have time to teach critical race theory. Are you kidding me? I have to just prepare my content for the next day. This whole discussion on critical race theory coming into classrooms this year, that's nuts.
Continue your debate.
Thank you. The only problem with this budget is that it's too short because teachers are working too hard and not being compensated enough. I'm willing to support this budget because I know how hard that our teachers have worked this year. And as the good gentleman from Nine referred to, they actually got the 5% holdback. And so they were denied that. The teachers in this state have been working incredibly hard this year. And I know the good gentleman from 23 knows that, and I know that.
That was John McCrosty of Boise, a Democrat. Once again, the Idaho House used talking points from the Idaho Freedom Foundation to kill the $1.1 billion public schools budget for teachers on a 34-34 tie vote today, with two Republican representatives absent. You're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is sponsored in part by Palouse Ocularium, creating fine eyewear for your lifestyle through eye exams, unique glasses, and contact lenses. Find Palouse Ocularium at 7th and Washington in Moscow, 208-883-3937, and PalouseOcularium.com. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and environmentalism.
University of Idaho President C. Scott Green said in a statement yesterday, disinformation threatens higher education funding. The email from President Green came 3 days after the Idaho House killed the higher education budget, after right-wing lawmakers used talking points from the Idaho Freedom Foundation, which claims legislative budget writers have not done enough to defund universities that teach the truth about racism and sexism in their classes. Green did not mention the Idaho Freedom Foundation by name in his letter, but he was clearly referring to them, writing to UI alumni and friends. The letter said, in an unprecedented action, special interests have been actively working against passage of the higher education funding bill in the Idaho legislature. These interests represent a libertarian-based ideology, the principles of which generally do not believe that any public funding should be used for public education. The misinformation and half-truths spread are directly impacting higher education funding by the Idaho legislature. Although the Idaho Freedom Foundation may contain libertarians, their ideology is more racist because they have been calling for the end of teaching about social justice, calling it indoctrination. The Idaho Freedom Foundation started their campaign against education with Boise State University in 2019, and they have been getting right-wing legislators to employ a divide-and-conquer strategy, including a so far unsuccessful attempt to split the higher education budgets into separate bills for each institution so that they can target the schools if they don't comply with their racist agenda. The first week in March, the Idaho Freedom Foundation attacked the University of Idaho with a 44-page report in PDF format called Social Justice Ideology in Idaho Higher Education. The report starts out by saying social justice education poses a threat to education in America and to the American way of life. Although the report does not define social justice, the Wikipedia entry for social justice states, social justice is the relation of balance between individuals and society measured by comparing distribution of wealth differences from personal liberties to fair privilege opportunities. The Conservative National Association of Scholars claims on its website, left-wing activists masquerading as professors are infiltrating traditional academic departments or creating new ones, departments such as Solidarity and Social Justice, to advance their cause. The Idaho Freedom Foundation report claims wherever social justice ideology, quote, is practiced, it compromises the pursuit of truth, the free exchange of ideas, and the aspiration of seeing people assimilate into the great American melting pot. It cultivates anger and resentment among the supposedly aggrieved while undermining the stability and mutual toleration that contributes to individual happiness and good citizenship. The report also claims Black Lives Matter is Marxist. It also calls for the legislature to restrict funding to public universities infused with social justice ideology and restore funding to universities that pursue their core mission of advancing what the Idaho Freedom Foundation considers truth and supporting the common good. The report also splits University of Idaho majors in a chart, claiming 10 majors are indoctrination majors, 6 are social justice in training majors, and the rest are professional departments. The list of majors accused of being indoctrination majors includes history, American studies, English, sociology, Latin American studies, Africana studies, anthropology, journalism and mass media, and women, gender, and sexuality studies. The report has splash quotes that take up whole pages with grayed out backgrounds where viewers can discern pictures of masked people who appear to be anti-police brutality protesters somewhere appearing to attack property. Although the report itself does not indicate there is a religious agenda, one full page, which appears to have a pull quote on a dark background, but it's not a pull quote because it does not appear in the report's main text, says mass movements can rise and spread without belief in a God, but never without belief in a devil. Idaho Freedom Foundation Executive Director Wayne Hoffman responded to University of Idaho President C. Scott Green's letter in a tweet calling it spin yesterday. Hoffman wrote a statement in response to the Idaho House's vote to kill the higher ed budget last week. Quote, congratulations to members of Idaho's House of Representatives who voted 57-13 Wednesday against a bill that would have allowed the continued funding of social justice programs on our state's public higher education campuses. Hoffman's statement continues, now the real work begins. Lawmakers must still pass a budget for Boise State University, University of Idaho, Lewis Clark State College, and Idaho State University. Radicalism has very much infiltrated the college system, and the cost to Idaho taxpayers and students is easily more than $20 million. That figure includes funding for gender equity and LGBTQ offices, myriad classes and lessons on diversity and inclusion, and teacher trainings built on critical race theory. Lawmakers must instruct Idaho schools that no public funds should ever be used for social justice enterprises. The public funds restriction is important as these schools operate on several baskets of money from many sources. No public funds means it doesn't matter whether the money comes from the state or federal taxpayers, student tuition or fees, or in the form of a grant from Coca-Cola, Disney, or Delta. No state institution should be engaging in the promotion of social justice dogma. Lawmakers should also ensure that state taxpayers are no longer forced to subsidize the extreme left-of-center programming on government-run radio stations. That includes National Public Radio, Saturated, Boise State Public Radio, and KISU. Referring to his station in Pocatello, that was a quote from Idaho Freedom Foundation Executive Director Wayne Hoffman. Republican Idaho Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan announced late last week she will create a task force to look into the idea that there is indoctrination in Idaho schools in such areas as social justice, critical race theory, socialism, communism, and Marxism. The Lieutenant Governor said in a press release, "We must find where these insidious theories and philosophies are lurking and excise them from our education system. Idahoans are increasingly frustrated by the apparent lack of awareness and leadership coming from the state on these issues." The attempt at the Idaho-style McCarthyism comes as the Idaho Freedom Foundation is red-baiting Boise State University and the University of Idaho for teaching social justice. Idaho Freedom Foundation supporters in the legislature have been pushing to slash the budgets of BSU and the University of Idaho to punish them for teaching the truth about racism in this country and in Idaho, and the House killed the proposed higher education budget last week, mainly for those reasons. McGeehan's Twitter announcement of the indoctrination task force elicited some critical responses. Here's some of them. Quote, actually, Janice, could we restructure your task force to tackle the removal of white supremacists from government positions? Hope there won't be a conflict of interest here. Another says, this news release is absurd and unfounded. I deeply regret ever working for you. Another says, what are you afraid of, education or us having one? Racism is real. Systemic racism is real. You can't task force it away, and we will fight you and your ilk in your efforts to remove the truth from our classrooms while you roll with your friends. That tweet included a photo of McGeachin as lieutenant governor posing in the state capitol with two militia supporters who were using white power hand signals. A fourth tweet response said, "I was born and raised here in Idaho. We rightfully struggle with diversity due to people like yourself reinforcing white supremacy and ensuring Idaho is hostile for marginalized people." More than 16,000 Idahoans have signed a petition against a bill passed by the House and Senate that would make it almost impossible to get an initiative on the statewide ballot, a citizen's right found in the state constitution. Former Idaho Supreme Court Justice Jim Jones late last week delivered a petition with more than 16,000 signatures to Governor Brad Little's office against Senate Bill 1110. The bill would require signatures from 6% of the registered voters from all 35 of Idaho's 35 legislative districts to get an initiative on the ballot. Republican Steve Vick of Dalton Gardens sponsored the bill in the Senate, and Republican Jim Addis of Coeur d'Alene was the lead sponsor in the House. It is already very difficult to get a citizens' initiative on the statewide ballot because current law requires signatures from 6% of registered voters in 18 out of the 35 legislative districts. The current system became law in 2013 after Idaho citizens took matters in their own hands in 2012 and used the initiative process to scrap the state's so-called Luna laws, named after then-Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna, which would have eliminated teacher tenure, based teachers' evaluations partly on student academic performance, established a performance-based pay system for teachers, and would have required students to take two online or blended courses to graduate. Citizens rejected the Luna laws using an initiative process which had been in place for decades, simply requiring signatures from 6% of registered voters statewide to get the initiative on the ballot. The legislature's 2013 changes to the initiative process greatly complicated signature gathering and increased the number of rejected signatures, since those signing initiatives must know which legislative district they live in so they can sign the correct petition. Signature gatherers must now carry multiple petitions if they want to collect signatures from people who live in different legislative districts. Idaho citizens took matters into their own hands again in 2018, using the initiative process to require Medicaid expansion to get health care to thousands of Idahoans in the Medicaid insurance gap. The next year, lawmakers sought to get their revenge on the voters, not only passing many sideboards to limit Medicaid expansion, but also passing a law requiring signatures from 10% of the voters in 32 out of Idaho's 35 legislative districts, and reducing the amount of time for gathering signatures from 18 months to 6 months. Governor Brad Little vetoed that bill after widespread public outcry. The vote Wednesday of last week in favor of Senate Bill 1110 on initiatives was 51-18. Republican Kerry Hanks of St. Anthony, who voted in favor, said, "I am opposed to ballot initiatives. This voting for this is a compromise for me because I believe that ballot initiatives are direct democracy, and that is opposed to what we have in a constitutional republic. Ballot initiatives should be difficult." And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
April is Financial Literacy Month, and one of the keys to good money habits is learning how to save. Unfortunately, many people aren't doing this, says Lupe Whistle, State Director of AARP Idaho. According to an AARP survey, the average savings amount for households near retirement is $14,500. She says this makes retiring comfortably a real challenge, but believes this month is a good time to talk about how the state of Idaho could help folks.
Begin talking about what we can do as a state to make it easier for young people and people of all ages to begin saving for their retirement early on in their careers.
Idaho lawmakers considered a program this legislative session, which would have created a state-facilitated retirement system as an option for voluntary payroll deductions for employees. The bill died, but Whistle hopes they'll take another look in 2022. Three states, including Oregon and Washington, have set up programs like this. Whistle says the state and federal governments end up filling the gaps when people don't have enough money for retirement. A Georgetown University survey found more than half of Idahoans don't have access to a savings plan at work, including 154,000 people at companies with fewer than 25 employees. Whistle says it can be difficult and costly, especially for small businesses.
That is why we're trying to figure out a solution so that employers can participate on a retirement plan and offer it to their employees, but where they do not have to deal with any of the administrative issues that come with a retirement program.
Whistle says the best advice for young people this month is to think about putting money away now.
If they start saving now, it will make a huge difference by the time they reach retirement age.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Whitman County will move back to phase two of the state's coronavirus reopening plan, mainly due to an outbreak centered in Pullman. The change, which takes effect Friday, means restaurants, gyms, and retail stores must reduce their occupancy from 50% to 25%. Indoor spectator events must not exceed 200 people, or 25% of fire code occupancy, whichever is lower. Sporting events can operate under Phase 3 restrictions if the health department approves the plan. Pierce and Cowlitz counties will also move back to Phase 2. Until this week, all 39 counties in Washington were under Phase 3. Larger counties, including Whitman, must have less than 200 new coronavirus cases per 100,000 people during a two-week period between March 20th and April 2nd in order to stay at Phase 3. They also must have fewer than five COVID-19 hospitalizations per 100,000 people over the one-week period between March 24th and March 30th. The state will next evaluate all counties Monday, May 3rd using different two-week and one-week periods. 70 business organizations, including the Association of Washington Business and the Washington Hospitality Association, signed a letter to Governor Jay Inslee Friday asking for three more weeks before the state takes more restrictive measures. The letter said, "Give us 3 weeks, and together we can make a large leap forward in increasing vaccinations and stamping out this virus." Meanwhile, Whitman County Public Health Department Director Chris Skidmore told the Daily News health workers vaccinated about 1,200 people last week at a clinic held at the Schweitzer Engineering Laboratories. Skidmore told the Daily News, "That was the biggest clinic that we've run so far in Whitman County, and I think we should be able to handle maybe upwards of 1,500 folks in a single day there." Starting Thursday, all Washington residents 16 years old or older can receive vaccines. Whitman County had 33 new coronavirus cases over the weekend and Monday with no deaths. There was one new death reported in the county Friday. Whitman County has had a total of 47 COVID deaths and 99 COVID hospitalizations since the pandemic began. Latah County has had 2,980 cases of the virus since the pandemic began and 10 deaths. Health officials reported two deaths from the virus in Latah County last week, with the latest death reported Friday. The Pullman City Council tonight will take up an amendment to a resolution relating to Pullman City Council procedures and update the location of City Council meetings for when the Council moves in to the new City Hall at 190 Southeast Crestview Street. The Council will also vote to approve spending $140,600 for the purchase of two new Ford Police Interceptor utility vehicles for the Police Department. The Council had approved the purchase of the replacement vehicles for the City's 2019 to 2024 capital improvement program. However, the council deferred the purchase due to COVID-19 financial concerns. The council will also be asked to authorize a local government grant application to the Washington Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation for the purpose of researching underrepresented populations in Pullman history. The council will also vote on accepting the low $183,000 bid from Curtis Concrete Construction Incorporated to replace sidewalks on the south section of Pioneer Hill and building new sidewalk sections on the west side of Southeast Harvest Drive from Bishop Boulevard South to Brelsford Drive, on the north side of Southeast Crestview Street from South Grand Avenue East to the City Hall driveway entrance, and from the end of Southeast High Street south into and along the edge of the new City Hall parking lot. The council will also hear an update presentation from United Way of Whitman County, and AWC CEO Peter King will present municipal leadership awards. The Pullman City Council will meet online at 7 p.m. tonight. The meeting is accessible through the Pullman City website. The Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday recommended the council approve an expanded sidewalk cafe for the One World Cafe at 6th and Main Streets. City Council member Brandy Sullivan is co-owner of the One World, which recently purchased the business space to the west on 6th Street to expand their indoor space. Scott Lawrence of the University of Idaho Art and Architecture Design Build Studio told the committee yesterday how his students designed and created an updated outdoor dining space around the exterior of the building.
We went out and measured to the eighth of an inch on every single possible location where there could be an encroachment on the right of way. We adjusted and worked out details. We mocked up the details full scale to make sure that we could build them and have them function at the sizes that are available. And I think your tightest clearance is 4'1" along Main Street, but we decided to make the clearances to the edges of the street wells or of the tree wells rather than going right up to the tree. We know there may be changes over time in how those trees are enclosed, and we wanted to make sure that we are clear regardless of what the city does there. And then finally, this was actually quite a challenge for the students to design something in the timeline that they have is one thing. To detail it out so that they could build it is another. To source all the materials and do all the budgeting from sheet steel to the screws is another. But then to know that it had to be able to be taken apart by two people very quickly. That was a set parameter that we set for the design. So here's the south side adaptable seating. You can see how that center, what is currently a kind of a blank wall with a, we'll call it a dusty and wind-rattled bulletin board, is replaced with a cedar siding. We worked with Doug and Melanie from Moss & Carey to take cedar trunks that would otherwise be chipped up and save them. We milled them down and are using them as the cedar siding. We got beautiful wood out of it.
That was Scott Lawrence of the University of Idaho Art and Architecture Design Build Studio speaking to the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee yesterday. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, clear skies expected between now and Sunday with a low of 31 tonight. Highs 57 tomorrow, 62 Thursday, 66 Friday and Saturday, and 71 on Sunday. Lows will be 34 Wednesday night, 37 Thursday and Friday night, and 40 Saturday night. Will also be a little breezy tomorrow. East winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 25. And tomorrow night, east winds 10, gusts up to 20. Currently 54 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can send your donations to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can also go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's underwriting, adopt a DJ, a PayPal option, and a Patreon button. And once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Look for the spring fundraising letter in your mailbox soon. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Coming up, we have Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. And that'll be followed by Labor Lines, our own labor show, hosted by John Andercheck, right here in Northern Idaho. And that'll be followed by music programming through the evening, Intercepted with Jeremy Scahill at 11. Stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and by Glasphemy, a maker of hand-blown glass products on Kamiokan Street in downtown Pullman. You can find Glasphemy on Facebook or by calling 509-332-1971. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including peace and human rights.